The buzz of the alarm at 6 a.m. jolts me awake, fear fluttering in my stomach. Memories of a patient who coughed up blood and died despite our best efforts. I dress in riding tights and my Ride Like a Girl sweater, putting on the silver heart necklace from my husband. Biking the 2 miles to the hospital through the cold November morning, I worry about the constant nursing dilemma, sounding alarms too soon or too late. Like Hemingway's middle-aged waiter who keeps a cafe open for those needing sanctuary, the hospital serves as a clean, well-lighted place, offering shelter from life's storms. The floor is quiet as I arrive 3 minutes late, my small act of rebellion. Night shift nurses cluster at the station, exhausted but alert. I learn about an ICU transfer overnight and devastating news. Ray Mason, a 25-year-old firefighter and musician I'd had coffee with last month, has relapsed with leukemia. Today, I'm assigned 3 patients: Richard Hampton, an elderly lymphoma patient; Dorothy Sooth, a cheerful leukemia patient nearing the end of her 6-week stay; and Sheila Field, a woman with a blood clotting disorder. Having only 3 patients means I can provide proper care rather than treating them as human to-do lists, a rare luxury in a system where overloaded nurses lead to preventable deaths. The rapid response team announcement sends me rushing to Mr. King's room, finding him unresponsive with blood streaming from his mouth. We quickly assess: oxygen 75%, heart rate 50, blood pressure 180. Despite the code team's arrival, his multiple complications and critically low platelets make his situation dire. Later, I prepared to administer Rituxan to Mr. Hampton, a biological response modifier with a black box warning that includes death as a potential side effect. Though effective against lymphoma, I worry about giving this toxic drug to such a frail patient. As Sheila heads to her CT scan, I notice her painful movements and help her onto the stretcher. Soon after, radiology calls with alarming news. Free air in Sheila's abdomen indicates a perforation, a surgical emergency, where bacteria leak into her abdominal cavity, potentially causing deadly peritonitis. This exemplifies the impossible calculations healthcare providers make daily, weighing different risks with no clear algorithm, like when a patient needs immediate surgery, but the surgeon wants to delay until morning. When I chase after surgeon Peter Coyne for Sheila's surgery, our secretary's comment about me bothering Dr. Coyne exposes the power dynamics between nurses and doctors. Despite our professional independence, doctors remain our shadow bosses. We execute their orders without direct supervision, creating an intricate relationship that persists even as gender dynamics in medicine evolve. Peter's reluctance to operate tonight presents a difficult choice between his fatigue and Sheila's worsening infection. Overnight delay means bacteria multiplying in her abdomen, potentially killing more tissue. I miss Mr. Hampton's rounds while celebrating with Dorothy, losing my chance to understand the Rituxan discussion. With Sheila's team, the attending physician grimaces. I'm an oncologist, not a hematologist, revealing discomfort with her rare condition. When the team rushes away for an emergency before examining Sheila, I'm left with unanswered questions. These hierarchies create a complex choreography that patients rarely see, but significantly impacts their treatment. When a colleague requests help transferring a sedated patient, I pause my rounds to assist. We position ourselves and slide him smoothly onto his bed, a moment of seamless teamwork amid chaos. Dorothy, hospitalized 6 weeks for leukemia, calls about her delayed Prilosec. During rounds, we discover her neutrophil count has reached 850, high enough to go home. The attending physician insists I perform the neutrophil dance, and despite feeling foolish, I shimmy, making Dorothy clap with delight. This success brightens our day, as Dorothy can finally go home. Meanwhile, I reschedule her Prilosec for earlier during her final hospital days. I spot Ray Mason on a stretcher, likely facing leukemia relapse. Despite needing a bone marrow transplant from his conservative brother, he jokes about becoming politically transformed. I remember Ray bringing his guitar during treatment, creating rare peace on our floor. After recovery, he returned to firefighting, proving patients can face death and move forward. By 1:45 p.m., I'm dizzy from hunger, having only eaten saltines and candy. Nurses work through unpaid lunch breaks without coverage, while hospitals subtly discourage claiming this time despite official policies, saving money at our expense. Time comforting patients with life-threatening diagnoses doesn't register on electronic to-do lists. Our documentation is largely CYA, with cumbersome systems forcing us to select from numerous options for even simple tasks like pain medication, pulling us away from bedside care. Verifying Mr. Hampton's chemotherapy requires meticulous checking of calculations, as small errors with these biohazardous drugs could be dangerous. Nurses routinely catch mistakes made by fellows during verification. As I complete Dorothy's discharge, I'm assigned another admission despite my heavy load. Pride prevents me from appearing vulnerable. I reflect on how patient flow equals hospital income, yet remember what truly matters: everyone being alive at day's end. I recall creating a time-free bubble to discharge Jen, a young leukemia patient new to Pittsburgh with only her husband. When insurance delayed her supplies, I gathered them from the hospital. I gave her my complete attention, silencing my phone and setting aside other tasks. I taught Jen how to care for her Hickman catheter with its three color-coded lumens, demonstrating with the red one, having her practice with the blue, and providing written instructions. For those 25 minutes, nothing mattered but her discharge. Dorothy receives this same focus before leaving in her Mary Poppins-like hat, sharing candy and waving goodbye like a queen, blowing kisses, a moment worth treasuring. When did you last give someone your complete attention? In our notification-filled world, these time bubbles become increasingly rare yet invaluable, especially in healthcare where human connection determines whether patients feel truly cared for. In the locker room, I transform from nurse to ordinary person, changing into biking clothes. The rhythmic pedaling soothes me as I reflect on how nurses must leave patients behind at shift's end, not from indifference, but practicality. We're the hospital's mechanics, providing seamless care across shifts, often never knowing patients' outcomes. I imagine Mr. Hampton recovering somewhere warm with his son, though patients linger in my thoughts even at home. Peter found Sheila had a perforated colon, requiring a possible permanent colostomy. Ray recovered and returned to firefighting. Dorothy died with family present. Mr. Hampton returned weeks later, his son showing new stress lines. Years later, I encountered that owlish intern who once said, "If we could know the future, our jobs would be a lot easier," a comment that shaped my thinking. That shift ended long ago, but its lessons endure. In healthcare, we learn control is largely illusion. Systems favor efficiency over humanity, and creating moments of genuine connection amid clinical chaos may be our most vital work.